Tonight's speaker is a very, very special person in my life. 10 months ago, I met, a very nice lady at a woman's meeting, and I just connected with her immediately. I never had a sister or really a good friend that I can call my best friend, and thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous, I can say now that I have a BFF. Before I used to be like, yes, bullshit, but they do exist. They are there for you. She is an inspiration to me. She's been sober for 5 years. And yay, 5 years. Like I say, I'm really honored to be her friend. I never knew what it is to meet somebody and actually pick up the phone and that person is actually right there. I never had that in my life. And I met that person in this room. So for all of you newcomers, you actually can find family that actually will love you forever, no matter what you do. If you throw in a tantrum because you don't want to do what our sponsor says, because we have the same sponsor, and sometimes he makes us do silly things, very silly. With the lunch is very silly. You'll hear about that. We belong to the same group, Rainbow, and all of my friends from Rainbow are here too to support her. So, said all of that, I know I'm going to be crying throughout this meeting because she is an inspiration to me. So please help me welcome Jo. My name is Joy. I am a grateful, recovering alcoholic. And I'm really nervous. I even brought some cheat sheets. Nora, thank you. You're going to make me cry. I'm a big crybaby. First of all, I want to welcome all the newcomers and everyone celebrating their birthdays. And thank you all just for being here. I went on a vacation in Hawaii, and I went to a couple of AA meetings there. It's just so cool to go to different places in the United States and maybe even the country and just have a family that you haven't even met. It's really exciting. That's a really fun experience. I got sober on May 3rd, 2009. A little bit about my childhood. I grew up in a really abusive family, very addict family. Probably by the time I graduated, I've been to like 13 different schools, so I was an armed military brat. My dad was in the military. I always felt like the oddball, always a new kid. So by the time I was a senior, I already been to 13 different schools, so I never really felt like I fit in. And I always felt like just different my whole life. I grew up, we didn't have cable in Germany, so my parents recorded George Michael, Michael Jackson, Tina Turner, Madonna, and so when I was like 4 or 5, I spent those years watching Rainbow Bright and He-Man, so it kind of explains why I'm kind of like kooky and just, I don't know, I just thought I have a place where, I finally walked into these rooms and I felt like I landed on my planet, and I felt like you guys speak my language. English is my second language, it was really hard for me to adjust, and now it's my first. I can understand my other language, but I don't know. It's just so cool, like, to come in a place and just where you guys totally get me. A little bit about my childhood. My parents were, old school, and so the way they would discipline me was just, I think one time they were trying to teach me the ABCs, and on like this little chalkboard, and I was like in my nightie, in my nightgown, and I couldn't get it. I think I was like 4 or 5, and I couldn't do my ABCs. I don't know if I have ADD or anything, but I could. I think I had trouble learning, I had trouble picking up English, and just, so they got frustrated, and they had like the little Kool-Aid, like the wooden Kool-Aid thing, it's like a stick, like a spoon, and they like hit me with that till it broke, and I peed in my nightgown, and that's just how it is, and they just didn't, I think whatever they learned when they were kids, they just carried that on, and so I found different like coping mechanisms at a really young age. I tried I think, wine or something. My dad's friend thought it'd be cute to give a 4-year-old alcohol because it was red. I thought it was Kool-Aid. And I was like, oh, I didn't like that. You know, and my first drunk was probably, I tried alcohol when I was like in junior high, but I probably didn't get like blackout drunk until I was like maybe in high school. And I find myself like in weird, just like, I found myself alone with this guy on the beach, and it was just, and then I found myself in the car on my way home, and it was just, it wasn't cute, but you know, that didn't stop, you know, it didn't stop me from that behavior. And I think I actually liked the effect, you know, I was addicted to just, like, I didn't just want to, some people are cool with a little bit of buzz, you know, I wanted to get, like, messed up. And that's what it was. That's all it was for, you know. I till this day, I don't know how people drink normally, like just one beer and call it a day. Let's see. What it used to be like. I felt like everything revolved around Planet Joy now looking at it, you know, and always passing out my pity parties. And I still actually, you know, till this day, I still think that sometimes. Like, everything that could have happened this week, and then I was telling myself, like, why is my family doing this? Don't you know this week is really important for me? And I forget that, you know, life happens, whether you like it or not. You know, that's life, and life isn't fair. Life does not have right timing. And this is where I honestly can say, and it, this is so new, and it really just touches my heart, I come here to feed my soul, and I learned what that meant here. You know, it's just so cool. I came from an art school, so I bottomed out in L.A. I went to this art school, and it was connected to a bar. It wasn't a bar school, but what it was, it was an art school, and then you walk out of the door, and then here's the bar. It was called the Brass Monkey, totally giving away my anonymity. And, you know, so how convenient was it after, studying overnight, midterm, finals, you go to the bar after, and I just remember just really inappropriate, just like, unmanageability, staying up, working full time, then going to school, then partying all night, and then getting home maybe like at 5 in the morning, then starting all over again. And then I didn't know that I was slowly killing myself, you know? And I was wondering why I couldn't perform at work, hiding at work because I was so drunk. I turned bright red when I get that Asian glow. I turned bright red. So I would hide in the shoe department so my boss wouldn't find me. And then one of my friends, he was like, dang, why are you so red? I'm like, oh, it's hot. You know, but so this is like crazy behavior. All the situations, getting myself in these really shady situations, you know, trying, I went to school by West LA, and you know what kind of drugs they're popular there for. So doing that for the first time, and not just doing it for the first time, doing it for the whole day. You know, most people, they do party drugs for fun. And I just felt myself going down, like doing party brownies on my own, you know, like usually do that at a party. And I didn't think, oh, you know, basically alcohol being the gateway drug, I didn't notice that, so I just went back to alcohol. I was like, man, that's just crazy. I'm just going to drink because it's legal. And that's what I didn't know. Like, I didn't know that my life was becoming unmanageable. I was just trying to find different venues. The walk of shame. What else can I think of? I lost my apartment. I couldn't afford it anymore. I was losing my job. Like, my addiction was just tearing up my life. I couldn't perform. And people knew something was going on, but they didn't have proof or evidence, so they couldn't technically support me. You know, they didn't have me on camera. Because some of my coworkers got caught on camera, like, with time theft. They would clock in and run out, and they caught them on camera. They, like, blew up their picture. But with me, they couldn't really, you know, catch me. And I think it was my soul. I was slowly dying inside, and I couldn't even keep my job anymore. What else? Let me look at my cheat sheet. And also, you know what I did a lot? I used people. I used boys, and I got tired of them. They started to become bugaboos, and just once they started to become sprung, and like, I was just like, this is not cute. And I would let them go. And, you know, that's how I treated them, like a little rag doll. And then I got with girls. I dated girls for a while. You know, I had my longest, like, 5 years with a girl, and then I used girls. And I wondered, oh, it's just you. Oh, it's boys. Boys are like, I had issues with boys, and now, oh, girls, I had issues with girls. And I didn't think it was all me, you know what I mean? I was just, and if there was another probably sexual preference, I'd probably try it too. But I'm like, okay, boys don't work, girls don't work, you know? It was just, basically what I'm trying to say, it wasn't working. And the universe was just like, I have nothing to give you anymore. Because I just kept on taking and taking. And there's this rule, it's the golden rule. And what is this saying that explains it? You can't walk around life with a catcher's mitt. You have to be willing to throw something back once in a while. And that wasn't me. I just kept on taking and taking and taking. I'm like, why isn't it working? You know, like manipulating people for money and just... I was just so selfish, and I'm so surprised that if my family does hate me, I'm surprised they don't, you know, because I was just, I was kind of like a tornado, you know, anything in my way, I would just wreck it, and just looking back at it now, I just can't believe how sad and dark my life was there, doing the whole, using people, places, and things, you know, my shopping addiction went crazy. I thought, if it didn't work here, then I'll move here, you know, changing geographical locations. Oh, I'm here, I hate it here. And I had a friend that told me, you know what, wherever you go, you tell me you hate it. And then I still didn't think it was me. She was saying, I don't think you're happy anywhere you go. And, you know, in actuality, I was really running from myself. You know, and this is where AA teaches me, like, it's just so much intimacy with yourself, just because I don't have, you know, all of that to run away to anymore. It's a scary place in your mind. It's like, it's one thing to get physically sober, but to get spiritually, mentally sober is one thing. And it's not so easy, but you could stay sober, but to be spiritually just bankrupt is a whole other thing. And I've been there, and I've been in dark places like that, and it was not cute. I'm still a student in life. You know, I think that's what helps me learn in AA, and that's what helps me listen in these meetings. To come into these rooms and just listen to people from all different walks of life, you know, listen to your story. For me, it's kind of like a movie, but real life, because you guys tell me all these, and you're so honest. There's just so much hope and so much serenity in these meetings, and I just feel so much gratitude when I walk in here. You know, I come in just bitching about everything, and then I walk into these rooms, and I forget about it all, because you guys, it's not that... It's not that your problems are worse, but it makes me look at things in perspective. Like, damn, I'm crying about this, but this person has this going on. I remember walking to a meeting one day, and this guy told me that his dog tore up, like, he mauled his roommate's face, you know, and the roommate was in the emergency room. And I'm not saying that that's a good thing, you know, to put me in check, but it makes you realize that there's so much things that people go through out there, and, like, the petty things that I look at, and I make big deals over, and feel sorry for myself. I like to, like, compare myself to kind of like a sponge, you know, still learning, still soaking things in. And I think once I stop thinking like that, once I stop letting myself being able to absorb things, then that's when I know I'm in trouble. You know, when the red flags start coming up, when alcohol starts looking really good, and let's see. One thing I also noticed, I did go to anger management classes, and I noticed that I was addicted to rage. And I noticed that my addiction was tied to anger and rage. You know, I had a lot of anger in me. And I was addicted to chaos and drama. You know, I didn't realize that wherever I went, it followed me. One metaphor, I went to this really good speaker meeting, and one metaphor that will always, like, burn through my memory is your addiction is like being in a cage with a gorilla, but the person used in other words is having, you know what, with a gorilla, and the gorilla is not done with you until it's done with you, you know, and that's really how I felt, because it was just... I just have so many friends, and like even myself, like, how much is enough, you know? I remember driving to this is when I moved back to the Bay Area, and I was driving to LA to go hang out with some shady people, and I didn't even have enough gas to get back home, you know? Like, a little crazy, I would put myself in situations like that. what else is there? One thing, okay, this has nothing to do with AA, but it totally relates. Okay, Will Smith, I saw Will Smith on TV. He was on, I think, Oprah Winfrey, and he shared this. If I could read it to you. Greatness lives on the edge of destruction. It's like you almost have to come to a breaking point. Sometimes the reason why someone is great is because they survived death. You are almost over, and that was it. You know, and I just remember blackout driving. I drove people in my car blackout. I know someone that killed a couple people while she was drunk. And she lived, you know. And I can't imagine doing that. I can't imagine. It's one thing to kill yourself or to hurt yourself because you want to drive, you know, under the influence, but to harm or kill other people. I remember when I would be going through it, like in relationships, or just going through a period, I would drive to the bar, get really messed up, and I tried to sober up and drive home. And it's just like, you know, I might as well just stay home and got messed up. Because can you think about what could have happened on your drive home? You know, just like little things like that, that at the time I don't think about, and now I think about, like, how serious it is to be driving just on one. Is, you know, I've driven with my cousin like that, and I remember bumping into, like, I ran into a fence, and I ran into, like, a car's mirror, and she didn't know I was, you know, she didn't know I was loaded, and I didn't tell her, that's messed up. And she was, like, scared. She was like, are you a bad driver or something? What is wrong with you? and now that I've been sober for 5 years, you know, for a couple years, I realize this addiction just creeps up on you. You know, I'm looking in the fridge and I'm not even hungry. And then I'm like looking in there. I'm like, what do I really want? I'm like, oh, Dad, are you there, Dad? Are you in the fridge? You know? Or, hey, Mom, are you in the shot glass? Oh, no, you're not in here. And that's really what I was looking for. I was really looking for love. One thing, this is one thing that I'm kind of going through right now, just like letting people go, because, like, most of my friends were an addict in whatever form, whatever way, and I had to let them go, you know, and I compared it to kind of like life being like an elevator, you know, sometimes as you go up through the elevator, you have to let people out, and sometimes I'm looking around like, this elevator is getting mighty lonely, you know, and this is where I come to see you guys, and like, I think the hardest part is to get up and drive and go to a meeting. My thing is, if there's parking, then you're going to the meeting. But if there's no parking, then, okay, maybe try to find another meeting. what else is there? One thing I would like to share to the newcomers is, it's just the simple things that will definitely help you is to get a sponsor, work the steps, find a home group, you know, switch things up. If you're in another city, try going to another meeting. Try out, you know, just, I'm not trying to say immerse your life in AA, but try to be of service. And it just helps so much. It gets you out of your shit. Because I tell you, once I walk into these rooms, I'm not saying it's not there, but I slowly forget the things I'm going through. It's not called fellowship for no reason, you know. Right now, let's see how it is now. Life right now is good. I have an amazing sponsor. She's taught me so much about spirituality, and she hasn't even forced it down my throat. It's just, sometimes I see the Dalai Lama in her eyes, and I don't know if I'm just crazy. Maybe it's just me. But I have, you know, wonderful BFF, and I have you guys. You know, I have a home group, you know, and I have, if I want to, I could go to any meeting I want. You know, before I had to go, like, bar hopping, and now I could just go meeting hopping, you know, and there's always, like, instead of a bar stool, there's always a seat for me, and if not, then I'll just stand up. One thing that I'll also share with you is I'm able to stay in the military right now, staying sober, and I'll tell you, it's so hard. You have no idea how much alcohol is so popular in the military, and I feel like such a square bear not being in the mix, you know, because after work they get messed up. That's what it is, alcohol, and because that's legal for the military, from what I know what they do. But But I'm able to do that because of you guys, you know. You guys taught me so much. One thing that I also want to share, and it's just more of a, something that's kind of helped me, is to also not just think of, because I think my addiction almost killed me. You know, my health was deteriorating. I was a hot mess when I got here. And just to not just think of what you're dying from, not just to think of what alcohol is doing to you, you know, why alcohol is killing you, try to think of things, the reason why you're living. You know, what's keeping you alive, what means something to you. If it's getting a slice of pizza, and that's the best slice of pizza you're going to have today, think about that, you know. Like, just little things, little sentimental things. If it's your baby, your kid, your mom, your dad, you know, I think it's good to have something to live for. And not that AA is not enough, but I think there's just so much out there now that I'm not so, I guess, I don't know if self-centered is the word, but just my addiction, I'm not centered around my addiction. I see that there's just this whole beautiful, like, world out there. The favorite thing I like to share is I do sky reports now, and my old sponsor used to make me do it. And when I did it, that's when I was getting sober. She actually had to let me go because I couldn't stay sober. And what I would have to do is call her every day and give her a sky report. And I had to call her so if the clouds were like billowy or shaped like cotton candy or like a dragon, I'd have to call and be like, oh, the clouds are amazing today, and have this like pink ray or a silver lining. And those were the good days. And the days when I just wanted, like, just having a shitty day because I was trying to stay sober and couldn't do it. You know, there's days I couldn't stay sober for more than 8 hours. And I would call her, I hate this sky report. The skies are ugly and it's cloudy and it's gloomy and I hate doing this. And it was just, but now I'm able to actually do it. And I actually am in love and mesmerized with the sky now, and I kind of get it, you know, and I'll just sit there and I'm like, wow, the sky looks bomb today, and it's just so cool. Like, you know how they say the best things in life are free? It's so true. Like, my parents are in another country right now, so I'm watching my mom's plants, and she came back to visit, she's like, oh, they're still alive. So I'm like, I'm doing something right. I have two dogs. I have two dogs, and those are my babies, and, you know, things like that, like, learning to appreciate little things like that. One thing I'd like to share with you that I do practice before I go to sleep, I do wake up, go on my knees and pray, and then before I sleep, I go on my knees and pray, but one thing I try to practice on a daily is, you can do it whenever you want, you can pick a certain time, but I try to pick one time so it becomes like a habit, and I lay in bed and I just dwell on three things that went well, and I just lay in there. It could be anything, it could be I had a really good walk with my dog, or something about food. I noticed I really love food now, you know, and I just let it marinate, and I just, you know, what happened, what made that, why did it go so well, you know, there's a million things that could have happened today, but why did that certain thing happen? I just kind of let it marinate, let it sit there, and I just noticed I'm in such a better mood, you know. I need a gratitude box, but it's kind of like a gratitude / God box. So what it is, instead of asking for what I want, I put in there as if God gave it to me already. So if I want more friends, I thank God for the friends that I have. You know, thank God for the good life that I have. And it's just, I notice that I'm in such a better mood. You know, and I'm not perfect. I have my days when I hate life, but I notice it's not as much, or it doesn't last as long as it used to. Because I do remember dry drunk when you're sober, but you're just not attending meetings. I had days like that, and I had a very special friend that just helped me out of there, and she gave me this really cool candle, and I have this, like, candle corner where I read, like, and it sounds really boring, but it's where I read literature, and I light that candle, and I kind of practice my spirituality, and I have, like, some seashells that I touch, and it helps me kind of, like, bring me back in, and those things it's not that I would never thought I would practice, but it's a, becoming a part of my life, and it's just so amazing. Like, it's not a chore anymore. Like, actually, I traded bowls for singing bowls, you know. Now I don't have to go to the club for slow jams. Like, I actually practice meditating now, and that's my songs that I meditate to. That's like my lullaby to my soul, you know. What else do I have? One thing that it's kind of cool and excited. Instead of going to bars, I go to the gym, and that's where I practice my bars there. So it's kind of cool, you know. I suffer from really bad depression, so sometimes before getting out of the house was so hard to me. If I could just read to you, this really sticks into my head, the AA promises. We will comprehend serenity, and we will know peace. And I so get that now. Before, it was just so hard for me just to get through one day of being sober. You know, I remember getting through a month, and I got excited with my first sponsor, and then I'd go back out there. And it was always like that. I would hit a month, and then I just couldn't do it anymore. It's like, I don't know if, you know, the addict or the alcoholic in me just couldn't stay sober for a month. One thing, this is really cool. I'd like to read this to you. It says, Hugo says, once everything falls into place, I will find peace. Spirit says, find peace and everything will fall into place. I'll end with this. I don't know if it's too short. Sorry. This is all I wrote. I was watching this TV show, and it was this really cool TV show. I won't say what it is. I don't know if I'm allowed to say what it is. But they were talking about what a mandala is, and I just recently found out what a mandala is. I've seen it before, but I never knew what it was called. Well, what it is it's a sand mandala, and it's this big, beautiful, like, circular design that the Tibetans or from Nepal, they make, and it's like this really elaborate piece, and they'll spend like days, weeks working on it, you know, and it's just like this really cool geometrical piece, and then after that, all this hard work of this really intricate, you know, different elaborate design, they'll just wipe it away. You know, they spend so long, like, prepping it and then designing it, and they just wipe it away. And then, and in that show, the person was telling another person to look at, you know, life or look at your experience as a mandala. You know, work hard, make something meaningful and beautiful, and then when you look back at it, you'll know it was just all temporary, you know? And that just makes sense. Like, it's kind of like one day at a time. Try to make today or whatever moment the best you can, because life is temporary. And that's something I'm just learning, you know? When something's good, I just let it ride, and I let it ride. And then when it's not there no more, I get all depressed. And that's life. You know, bad things to happen is temporary as well. And I just want to thank you guys for letting me share. I'm really just honored and humbled. Don't be shy. Yes. She's here for another 10 minutes.
What are you doing in the
military? Let's see. How can I... Okay, it's like... If I were to explain it, it's kind of like air traffic control, but not as extreme. We work with the pilots, and we kind of find out where they are. We're dispatchers. We give them, like, the weather. We keep in touch with flight services for them. It's a really cool job. I get out soon. I get out in 2016. So kind of excited for that.
Have you had a experience with the steps that you can tell us about and they change the way you look at things?
Oh, yes. His question was, have I had experience with doing step work that changed my outlook in life or my perspective? I would say doing my step 9, making my amends. You totally, you know, what do they say? Make plans, not outcomes. I don't know the exact words or the exact, but that, I made amends to my brother, and he basically told me, Oh, okay, but just to let you know, I think you should do this with your life. And so, you know, just, it made me realize, like, to not have expectations in people. And I think that was total humility, you know, right there. What do they say? That the word humility, it's not like being humiliated, it's a different meaning. And it comes from the word hummus, meaning earth. And that's what I'm learning. I think this program really strips me down, like, to the nitty-gritty. And sometimes I feel like I'm not sure, because I'm just like, oh my God, I thought my head was so big, and I thought I was, and now that I'm here, I'm just like, I'm really not sure. You know, just like my sponsor said. What happened? Oh wow. What happened? One, it was little things. I mean, my life was just unmanageable as is, but it was little things that, I think there's just certain breaking points in your life where you're like, what am I doing? Do you want to know what happened or what I did? One thing, I didn't get sober yet, but I wanted to impress this guy, and I worked for a department store, okay? I worked for Macy's, and so I wasn't making much. So I got him a room at the Ritz-Carlton in L.A., trying to impress him, and it's like $400 for one night, and that didn't work, and it was horrible. Like, I thought it would be the perfect, like the movies, you know, the music videos where they go to Ritz-Carlton and they get, no, it was horrible. And I called my sponsor. I left the room. I called my sponsor crying, and she, I found, luckily it was big, so because it was so big, there's like a lounge to hang out. It was kind of cool, but it wasn't cool at the moment. It was, and I remember paying in cash. How embarrassing! My friend, he was like, "Girl, how are you gonna pay in cash? You better go to the Motel 6 down the street. Most people pay with their black card." And you know, it's just little things like that. Because I thought it was, "Oh, I'm gonna impress him. He's gonna see this thing. We're not together." And it was just little things like that, like things that I thought I would never do. You know, embarrassing myself. It just, like, my bottom just kept on getting lower and lower and lower. And what I think is, when you're ready, you're ready. You know, when you just can't do it anymore, when nothing's working. And I remember telling my sponsor, I was like, "Hey, but I didn't go back out there, you know." Well, what did I tell her one time? Because I was able to stay sober for a little bit longer. She's like, I was like, "Oh, I'm still sober right now." She's like, "Congratulations." She's like, "You keep up this behavior, you're gonna end up right back where you came from." It's just that lifestyle I had, the people I surrounded myself with. I don't know if that answered your question.
How about talking about surrendering? When did you surrender?
When did I surrender? Oh, wow. Do you want to know when or
yeah.
The circumstances?
Yeah, the circumstances. Quit going back out all the time.
I think it's just, it wasn't working, you know, and like it just, no, my sponsor actually had to work me through that. This was another sponsor. And that's the thing, guys, I've had so many sponsors, keep on going back, keep on, like, don't be discouraged if a sponsor lets you go. It has nothing to do with you. And sometimes, you know, just like certain people in your life, they have to leave to make room for another person. So I used to feel like, you know, "Oh, it's because I'm Asian and nobody wants me." You know, like, it has nothing to do. It's just, you'll find a sponsor that fits. And just because that sponsor fits right now doesn't mean they're going to be your sponsor forever. But she walked me through it. It was just not working. Like you know how, I don't know if you, because I can't really use someone else's experience, but if you watch, like, movies and you see someone using and they still don't look happy and they still keep on, because they're trying to get that feeling, that first, you know, hit or that first drunk, and it's just not working. And that's just, I was just, it was just the worst low, and my sponsor literally had to walk me through it, and I had to keep in touch with her. I think I did probably go back out once, but I have to be rigorously honest with her about everything, because it's like if I even lied about one white lie, for some reason it turns into something that I have to lie about again, and it's like I was out there again. I was like, I don't know. Someone else? Did you have a question in the gray hat and the black shirt in front of the guy? Yeah. I still do. How do I address that? I think, I know it sounds cheesy, but compassion. I think because now people are forgiving me. I don't have, it's not perfect with my family. They're still trying to forgive me. But compassion for other people, because that was those people, you know? And I remember I was about to get into it with this lady in the gas station or something, because she told me to move, and I was like, and long story short, this was before my anger, I think I had an anger management class that day, we started talking. She was a widow, and her husband passed away, and she's like, oh, how do you put air in your tire, your air, and I helped her put air in her tire, and she's like, I never learned since my husband passed away. She owned like a Mexican shop, or not, I don't know, it was like, I can't remember what nationality she was, but she had to make cookies, and she gave me some cookies. But I'm just saying, like, if you just give back a little bit, even if it's just compassion, that's free, you'll be surprised. I got free cookies. I didn't, you know, cut her out. Because if you want, you know, working step nine for people to forgive you, you got to be able to forgive people. And some people, it takes a whole lot of serenity prayer for them. I pray for people a lot, too, and sometimes it works. I pray for my coworker and he left. And I'm not saying I'm powerful. I'm not saying it's powerful, but God works in his way. So.